Hello and welcome to Movie Challenge Accepted. I'm Jason.
And I am Arco.
And this is our first emergency podcast, yes. Arco. This is unplanned.
Yeah, we felt the need to have to put this one out.
We had to put this one out because this is the first movie we've done that was unchallenged.
Right, right.
You did not issue this to me. Obviously, for those of you that are listening, you see the title of the episode. Mm-hmm. I went out with the wife on Wednesday, and we're recording this on Friday, January 14th. But I went out with the wife on Wednesday, and we saw, for completely independent of you.
Yes, yes.
we bought tickets and went to see Spider-Man No Way Home.
Right. And for those of us out there that don't know us personally, just through the podcast, I cannot stress enough to you how big a deal this actually is, where Jason has admitted that he's only ever watched one MCU film, and that was Iron Man back in 2008. And until we started this podcast, he had not watched any others. So I have challenged him with a few MCU movies, and he did this all on his own. Now, Jason, I need to ask you this question. Do you think, first and foremost, that you would have seen this film had you not started this podcast with me and had a little bit of frame of reference leading into this movie?
So that's where this gets interesting. Like, I think the idea of this movie and the cultural presence it has sort of, the footprint it's had, I find fascinating, because part of what you and I discuss and talk about all the time with a couple of friends of ours is this idea that, like, there's no any one cultural institution that sort of takes over at any one time. Like, we used to have Game of Thrones,
right.
And that might be the last sort of remnant of the monoculture, mm-hmm. that water cooler show that everyone is talking about. Like, we don't seem to have that anymore.
No, I agree.
I guess the closest thing that comes to it are the Marvel movies.
It's cinematically, yes, I believe so.
I mean, like, this movie, I'm going to look it up, but basically this movie is the biggest movie of the year, yeah, by far, of 2021 yeah. and 2022.
Right, absolutely.
And for instance, right now I'm looking at this, the last Box Office Mojo, the last day they have gross sales for, mm-hmm. for Far From Home was, let me see, January 12th, it made $2.2 million.
Right.
On a Wednesday. And so 30 of those dollars were mine.
Yes, yes. Well-spent dollars, I would imagine. But we'll get into that. I'm looking at an article right now that says that it has made $1.5 billion globally and is only $8 million away domestically before it crosses over the line that Infinity War had put up back in 2018, which is amazing numbers while we are still in a pandemic.
Right. We're still in the pandemic. We're still in Omicron. And I think, as I said, like, the last property I can remember having this sort of impact where everyone's talking about it was Game of Thrones at its height.
Right.
And I think that's what kind of prompted me. I think I might have gone to see this, even if we weren't doing the podcast. I think I might have gone to see it. I was shocked when I said to my wife, who, and she doesn't watch any of the Marvel movies,
right.
I said, "Hey, I'm thinking I'm going to go run to the movies tonight and see Spider-Man." And she said, "I want to see Spider-Man."
Oh, wow. Okay. That's great.
And I said, "Really?" I said, "Why?" And she's like, "Well, everyone's kind of talking about it." So this kind of drew me in for the exact reason we were talking about, which is, like, everyone's talking about it.
Right, right. Exactly. And the fact that she also wanted to come is almost as big a deal to me that as you wanting to see this on your own. May I ask, have you seen, I think you have said that you remember watching the Sam Raimi films when they first came out in 2002, 2004. Did you happen to see the Mark Webb films, the Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2?
No, those are the Andrew Garfield ones, right?
Did you happen to watch those at all?
No, I saw all three of the Tobey Maguire, right, Sam Raimi, right, films.
Okay.
Liked the first two very much. Right. Didn't care for the third.
Yeah, you and everybody else.
Yeah, that's my recollection.
Okay.
I have a vague remembrance of catching one of the Garfield movies on TV, mm-hmm. one time. Okay. And I think Dennis Leary is in it. Is that accurate?
Dennis Leary was Captain Stacy, Gwen Stacy's father. And yes, he passes away in the first movie.
Okay, so I saw a scene with that, and I like Andrew Garfield. I would argue that Andrew Garfield, well, I should say before this movie, I would have argued that Andrew Garfield's probably the best actor of anyone that's portrayed Spider-Man.
Okay, I might agree with that since Toby hasn't done much since 2013. And
Yeah,
so I mean, the last thing I saw him in was, help me out here.
Great Gatsby?
Yes, thank you, Great Gatsby. I'm sorry. I have Leo holding that glass in my hand, in his hand, but I couldn't think of the name of the movie. That was the last thing I saw him in.
I was shocked that he hadn't, I guess he's been locked in a poker room somewhere, which is
it's entirely
what
possible.
What he's been into. But yeah, so like you were basically an opening weekend ticket holder down in Florida,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And you saw it in theaters twice.
Yes, I did see it in theaters twice. And the second time I was with somebody who had not seen it, and I was able to enjoy the movie even more because, like many times when we go see a movie more than once, you catch things you didn't catch the first time.
Yeah. And also, I think seeing it with people that aren't as vested, it might give you kind of a baseline for how they react, how effective it is.
100%. The person I was with was definitely not vested in any of these films. It was sort of like, do you want to go? Because I'm going. So if you want to hang out with me, you're going to.
Yeah. And you know what? And there's worse ways to spend 2 hours and 28 minutes.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The other thing that kind of got me cued into, man, maybe I need to see this, is a big aspect of this podcast is my potentially pretentious belief about what quote-unquote important films should be.
Okay.
And The Hollywood Reporter on Christmas Eve published an interview with Kevin Feige, Sony chief Tom Rothman, Amy Pascal, and Tom Holland, and I think Zendaya as well, discussing the fact that they're going to make a push within the Academy Awards season to have Spider-Man nominated as a Best Picture.
Okay. I think I remember you saying something along those lines, and I think hearing that, even again, I would imagine I scoffed at that. So
you may have scoffed also. So this is, I almost think, like, you can talk about the movie and what happens in the movie, but I almost think that the more interesting discussion is kind of the effect that this movie has. And this has been what prompted this podcast, right? The ongoing discussion that we've had about what Marvel movies have done to films in general.
Right. And where I feel it's been a positive influence, and you think that there's been a negative influence on storytelling, on writers, and movie making in general.
And I got to tell you, though, I think you'd have to be an intentional asshole to not go into this movie, watch it, and to come out without at least a little bit of a smile on your face.
I agree. I agree 100%.
I don't think I've seen Holland in anything else. But I came out of this thinking that this was the most reminiscent a movie experience of reading comic books.
Oh, absolutely, Jason. 100%. I'm glad you said that. I'm not sure who your favorite comic book character was when you were younger. However, for me, it was always Spider-Man. Everything since the cartoons from the 60s that we would catch in the 70s or Saturday mornings, or Spider-Man and his amazing friends. And here's a little note for those who don't know. My daughter is named Angelica, and she's named after Angelica Jones, who was Firestar on Spider-Man and his amazing friends. When I was 30 years old, my wife at the time threw a Spider-Man themed surprise birthday party for me. So as you can imagine, Spider-Man has been a big part of my life. So so I'm not sure who you follow, but this was always been a big deal for me.
It's funny. I'm on both ends of the spectrum. I was a huge Spider-Man fan, huge.
Right.
And I was also a massive Batman guy.
Okay.
And those characters are polar opposites.
Oh, 100%.
But yeah, I was always a huge Spider-Man guy, and I think that Holland captures what my imagining of Peter Parker was perfectly.
Yes, they played him. He has played the character so incredibly well. The awkward teenage high school kid, the nerd, the outsider, and that's what Peter Parker was when Stan Lee and Steve Ditko came up with him in 1962. He was a wallflower, and he was, you know, it was basically an allegory for puberty. Basically, he's coming into his own. He doesn't know who he is and everything. And I think that Holland captures the essence of Spider-Man even more than Toby did. And I thought Toby was the best up until Holland came along.
So what I from the reading I've done, I haven't seen any of the standalone Garfield movies, but apparently there are people that say that the Garfield character was the quippiest and sort of the most sarcastic, wisecracking version of Peter Parker.
He was, and in the first film, he really that was the best part of it. So in my opinion, he actually had the look of Spider-Man like Ditko would have drawn him, because he was tall and lanky, whereas Toby was a little bit shorter and stockier. And, you know, Holland is basically just still growing up, so you don't know what he's going to be. But as far as the quips in the middle of battle that Spider-Man is known for, the Garfield character was the best one.
And having said that, though, mm-hmm. I can't help but... We've talked a lot about the sense of like what it is to be a movie star, mm-hmm. and how there are certain actors that just sort of draw your eye on screen.
Right.
And God damn it, man. I don't know if anyone knows this. This Tom Holland kid, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good. Absolutely.
And actually everyone on the screen, Zendaya, the kid that plays Ned Leeds, mm-hmm. Jacob Batalon.
Yes.
I don't know. There's like a palpable energy, almost like it reads that they are a good actor is gonna make you believe what's going on. And these three actors, when they're on screen together, do a damn good job of making you think they are all best friends.
Absolutely, and they've been building this up since the first film back in 2017. You believe that they are who they are portraying. And that's what else can you say about an actor doing their job? They really do their job.
Yeah, there's nothing else that can be said negatively in that regard. And you know, and my other fear with regards to going into this, well, actually, we didn't get into the Hollywood Reporter article. Mm-hmm. There's a quote here from Tom Holland,
okay.
And you and I, we've discussed Martin Scorsese. We haven't done a Scorsese movie, mm-hmm. Yet. I'm sure we will at some point. Mm-hmm. Tom Holland's quote in the Hollywood Reporter interview: "You can ask Martin Scorsese, would you want to make a Marvel movie? But he doesn't know what it's like because he's never made one. I've made Marvel movies, and I've also made movies that have been in the conversation in the world of the Oscars. I don't know what he's talking about, but okay. I don't know which movies he's done other than that have been in the conversation." going back to Holland. "And the only difference, really, is one is much more expensive than the other. But the way I break down the character, the way the director etches out the arc of the story and the characters, it's all the same, just done on a different scale.
Right.
So I do think they're real art." Close quote, Tom Holland. Are these movies real art?
You're asking me? I've argued for these films being art for years, you know, and I've been made fun of. I've been lambasted and
by me, usually.
Yes, by you. While I agree, you know, I agree with what Martin Scorsese says. We've talked about it on the on this podcast in the past, that it's I'm not sure, you know, I'm going to not quote him directly, but he says that these type of films have ruined a lot of the filmmaker's experience over the last decade or so. You have echoed his sentiments. I agree that we've shifted towards this type of film over the last decade. However, I believe it's cyclical, and it will come back to a different type of film, one where Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola will be more familiar with, probably in the near future.
The more I watch these, and the more I kind of try to have an open mind about this stuff, you're probably right. And also, the other thing that I need to keep my head on straight with regards to this stuff is, like, I guess these movies can still find a home. Last night, Nicole and I, my wife just watched The Lost Daughter.
okay.
on Netflix, which is a movie I don't know if I'll assign to you, but it's Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut.
Okay.
And it's a quiet adult drama where not a whole heck of a lot happens. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. And that got made and I saw it. And it's out there in the world, and so I guess I can't complain that much.
There's still, but the film like that, Jason, would you ever have expected a film like that made by Maggie Gyllenhaal to ever receive the kind of fanfare that a Marvel movie would ever receive?
Well, no, but it never. I think it never would. Before that. Right, like I think it's always been those two different types of movies. It's very rare that you have like a big budget movie that sort of crosses over into the realm that has sort of that artistic kudos and that confidence, but also is a big budget actioner that kind of satisfies, checks all the boxes, like Titanic, right?
Yeah, and even that was a slog for me for the first 2 hours until the damn thing started sinking.
Well, I mean, again, and then I could say to you, well, most of the rest of the world disagrees with you because that was the biggest movie in like for years.
I agree.
Another one would be like Saving Private Ryan. Huge movie, action movie, genre movie, but also incredibly well done. But yeah, like I guess these movies have always sort of coexisted. My worry's always been that when it becomes only these movies, that's when you kind of have to worry about what's going on. And the issue is...
But is it only these movies out there, or is it that's what is being spoken about mostly? Because the Maggie Gyllenhaals of the world, the small independent directors, are still making their movies like they always have. However, if is it MCU's fault? Is it Kevin Feige's fault that Fanfare, Empire, and Entertainment Weekly don't speak about the smaller films as much as they do the big ones? Or really, whose fault is it?
Well, that gets into the question of like who's leading. Is it that Kevin Feige and the Marvel Universe is leading, is giving the audience what they want, or have Kevin Feige and the Marvel and Disney overlords discovered what the key is to unlock the wallets of everyone in the world?
There's a formula. I think you're right. You've said it before that there's a formula to this, and they have hit upon it in a way that nobody ever thought was possible before. But how long can it possibly go for?
You know, I would have said that we're kind of already on the downward slope of this, but then you get a movie like this that is just everyone is watching it. And like I said, it dragged me out of my house on a Wednesday night to go see it at our local theater. And yeah, man, I had a blast. And all the aspects of the movie itself that I was afraid were going to be purely fan service, mm-hmm. I thought they all worked.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There was definitely fan service in this film. There were definitely things that people hearken back to the Tobey movies and to the Andrew movies, and that not only gave you a smile and made people cheer. Now I'm not sure if you had people cheering 1 month after it was released, but on the day that I first saw this film, people were out of their seats clapping, yelling, cheering, and it happened very often, not just when the action was going on. We're talking about just when one person showed up, people were screaming. This type of film, I think, captured everything when it comes to fan service, but they didn't just do it for fan service. Everything worked, like you said.
Yeah, and I think that's where they really succeeded, is they didn't just throw out characters. They didn't just bring back Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and Jamie Foxx and Alfred Molina. They didn't just bring them back for the sake of showing them and getting that cheap fan service cheer. It makes sense within the story, right, which kind of supports the theory that like you can do whatever you want as long as it's always first and foremost
and
improves
the
story.
Isn't that the most important thing that you said? A good story is what's going to sell. I mean, you as a writer, and as a person who enjoys films and writing, a good story will grab anybody, correct?
Yeah.
And that's what they did here. And even though you have not seen the first two films in this trilogy, you were perfectly comfortable going in, watching it, and getting what they were doing. You may have a few questions, but you were not lost.
No, okay. They do a good job of it. There are a few. I've seen enough of these Marvel movies now to sort of have an idea of how they work, and there are a few issues I have with them. Namely, what it seems is that the opening of each movie has to sort of clean up the mess left by the movie that came before it. And we did Age of Ultron recently, mm-hmm. and the opening scene of that movie is the attack on the Hydra base in Wachovia Bank. They attack Wachovia Bank. And so the opening scene, and I get you have to open, or you know, the formula says you have to open with that big action scene to get everyone excited.
Right.
But it opens with the picking up from the movie before.
Right.
And this movie picks up presumably right after the events of Far From Home.
Yes, the very next day, right after they leave London, right after the attacks on London by perpetrated by Mysterio, we see that swinging through New York with MJ, Peter Parker is in for the surprise of his life on the Jumbotron in Times Square.
Right. And, you know, they got into a few interesting ideas with that, the concept of privacy and the concept of trying to be your own person. But then these are my few issues that I had with this movie. Because if you want to pick it apart, if you want to pick any movie apart, you can probably find the seams.
Yes.
They kind of introduced that in the beginning, and then they quickly get away from it. And, you know, Peter's able to walk through his school. After that one scene of him walking in that first day, it's mostly unmolested. Mm-hmm. And then he's only being followed later on in the movie. He's only being followed by J. Jonah Jameson mm-hmm. and the DailyBugle.net.
Right.
It kind of seems as though that interest in him fell off quick, although maybe that's kind of a comment on the viral nature of fame. I don't know. There's a lot that you could there's a lot of ideas you could impose onto the structure of this movie if you wanted to.
I think you're right about the viral nature, though. I mean, you know, people get tired of the new hot thing very quickly these days because there's always something else out there.
My other issue from like a story point of view is Cumberbatch tells Pete. So Stephen Strange tells Peter and MJ and Ned, this is what happened. We've opened up the multiverse. These people are coming into our universe.
Right.
He then says, you guys need to find them and send them back. And he goes upstairs to what? Have a nap? to drink some coffee?
After he tells them to Scooby-Doo this shit.
Yeah.
You know, the thing with Doctor Strange in this film and the way he's been portrayed was the way that he was originally portrayed in the books by Steve Ditko, again, who also created Spider-Man with Stan Lee. And he was a very pompous ass when he first came on the scene. And Cumberbatch plays a pompous ass very well, as we know. So he has gone with that, you know, with that particular portrayal ever since his standalone film in 2016.
Never read Doctor Strange as a comic.
Trippy.
Never drawn to him.
Yeah, me neither. Very trippy, but you know, I've read enough of him to know what kind of character he was, and you know, like in the film, I know you haven't seen it, but it's Doctor Strange, and I'm better than you, even though without saying it, you know, those kinds of words. And even when he went to go find the Ancient One to help heal his hands, it wasn't for any other reason other than himself. So he still has a little bit of that in him through the portrayals over the last few movies.
Yeah, and Cumberbatch is a great actor.
Right.
I love him.
Right.
I love him when he shows up. But I do have to laugh, you know, if you ever think about what, and I haven't done any real research into how these movies are made. We know that they're mostly made in Atlanta on green screens.
Right.
But every time I see someone like Cumberbatch just whipping his hands around as he casts spells, I'm picturing him hanging from these cables
right.
in this green box somewhere in Atlanta. And I wonder if he ever thought when he was portraying Hamlet on the West End Theater in London, if he ever thought this is what I'm going to be doing with my life.
I can't imagine that anybody, any of these actors would have thought that. There have been some great actors that have come through these films through the years. I mean, I used to say Anthony Hopkins, but I mean, after he was portrayed Odin in the first couple of movies, he started doing Transformers films. So that guy is just
wait, Anthony. Hang on, Anthony Hopkins has been in both Thor movies and Transformer movies.
Yep. Oh boy, that Transformer film was ferocious.
I mean, really?
You talk about a money grab. I don't know if he needed the money, but boy, oh boy, he totally mailed it in on that one too. And you know, he was probably kind of mailing it in on the first two Thor films also. But he was a name, and you know, he played the role pretty well. So huh. I mean, listen, you want to be an actor, you don't care where you're acting. It doesn't matter. Not everybody can be Robert De Niro, and I guarantee you, if these films were around when Robert De Niro was at his peak, he would have taken one or two of them.
Yeah, you're probably right. Oh, and again, absolutely. Listen, it's as long as the actors think it's worth it and they're having fun, like I'm fine with it. I do, but I do wish that we got in the 15 years or however long it's been that Robert Downey Jr. portrayed Tony Stark, mm-hmm. I would have liked to get a little more Zodiac and Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and a little less, you know, Civil War and Avengers, but that's the trade-off you make, right?
Unfortunately for Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man has defined him and his role, and there are millions and millions of people that have grown up knowing him only as Iron Man, whereas you and I know him as a drug addict for most of the 20 years prior to that, and this was his last shot at redemption, and look what he did with it. So, you know, there are plenty of people that don't know that, and you know, I think he's okay with it at this point. You know, if he makes a couple of movies here and there that do well, fantastic, but as we've learned, it's going to be tough to get out of the shadow of Tony Stark.
Yeah, I don't imagine. I even wonder how someone like Tom Holland, like I'm looking at his IMDb right now because I was curious what else he'd done before he became Superman.
Yeah.
And he was in the adaptation of a book I love, In the Heart of the Sea, which is written by Nathaniel Philbrick. And he did that in 2015, and then he shows up in Civil War, which I haven't seen, but is the subject of our next episode.
Yes, it is.
And from there, it's he's in Lost City of Z, which I didn't see, and then he's Spider-Man, Avengers, Avengers, Spider-Man, and he's in, he was in Cherry, which was a movie based on a novel written by a former Army enlisted guy. About a guy robbing banks after he becomes addicted to drugs, which I was interested in, and then a lot of people said it was terrible, so I swerved from it. But like, how does someone like him, he's 25,
right?
He's gonna be Spider-Man for the rest of his life, whether or not he chooses to step away from it. Like, you know, Tobey Maguire, I guess to a lot of people, is still viewed as Spider-Man.
So what's interesting is that Holland has gone on record of saying, I don't see myself playing Spider-Man when I'm 30 years old. However, they're already set up for at least one or two after this film. And, you know, one thing we haven't spoken of, and I'm not sure if you know this, but in after 2018, oh, wait a second. Okay, so Far From Home came out in 2019. Right after that, Sony and Marvel, Sony who owns the rights to Spider-Man, long story, and Marvel, who have been making these movies together, co-jointly, have decided they weren't going to make any more movies. There was not going to be a number three. It was going to end with Mysterio and how, you know, everybody knowing he's Spider-Man and that's it. And it wasn't until Tom Holland went out publicly and basically begged them to work it out that they were able to figure something out now. I mean, obviously, a kid saying, please, 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 I want to make the movie is not going to do it. It's the fact that there was billions of dollars on the table. I'm sure that's what did it. But he was adamant that he wanted to finish this trilogy.
Is there, I mean, I haven't done a whole lot of research into this other than a few articles. Is he on board for another?
I don't know about the contract for another one. I know that they are talking about two more films. I believe that they do want to get Venom in the MCU, fighting against Holland Spider-Man.
And, may I interrupt?
Yes. I figured we were going to go there at some point.
So I was aware before entering the Marvel Universe with you on this podcast, I was aware of the trend or the recurring motif of the post-credit sequence.
Yes. Stingers, as you like to call them.
Stingers. And so when the credits ran... Oh, that's another thing that's kind of cool that I don't think I give Marvel movies credit for. The James Bond movies always had cool opening credits.
Okay.
And the Marvel movies have some pretty awesome closing credits.
Okay.
Across the board. I just want to put that out there.
Spider-Man most, though. I know what you're talking about, the way that they put the music to it and the drawings and everything. You don't see that in all of them. Most of them are much more serious than the ones that Spider-Man's have been doing.
This one, this post-credit, this credit sequence is really awesome. Yeah, and then we get to Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock at a bar in Mexico or some...
Yeah, right.
Okay, it's Mexico. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something. Tom Hardy, I think, is a great actor. I don't know why he has latched on to Eddie Brock slash Venom as like his... This is going to be the project that defines him as an actor.
It's his baby. But it's his baby.
He, from what I gather, he loves this character.
He really does.
I've never seen... He's done two, I think, right? Venom and then Venom Let There Be Carnage.
Right, right.
Is that how he talks in the movie?
It's the strangest thing. I thought that the Bane... The Bane portrayal in 2012's Dark Knight Returns or whatever, Dark Knight Rises, was going to be the weirdest accent he ever put on. I mean, the man puts his all into how he sounds, but man, it's a weird sound.
I don't get it. Like, I sat there because my wife went to get up and put her coat on, and I said, wait, there's going to be something. I knew it was coming. I didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't spoil it for myself. And it's just him talking, and I get, because the Venom character and the Eddie Brock character in the comics is kind of a split personality deal. Mm-hmm. But my God, I could not watch. If you assign me a Venom movie, if you challenge me with one of them,
I won't.
The podcast might have to end.
No, I won't.
While
I enjoyed them, they're just too. It's more for me than anything else. I couldn't do that to anybody else.
I just don't get it. Tom Hardy also loves to have roles where his mouth or face is obscured, like with Bane and Mad Max.
Right, right.
And Dunkirk, he played a fighter pilot for most of Dunkirk. But yeah, man, that was the one thing that I'm like, oof, I do not want to see this. But I'm assuming, obviously, he leaves a little bit of the symbiote as he blips back out into his own universe. Exactly. He leaves a little bit of the Venom symbiote.
And that's how they got it in there. I mean, I don't know whose idea it was, but they obviously have been trying to figure out how to get Venom into the MCU while also acknowledging the other universe. So, this was the only way for them to do it. And I think that worked out well.
So I was reading right before we got on, I was reading a Variety interview with the screenwriters of this movie. Let me see. I apologize. I'm going to have to get into a little more. Oh, Eric Summers and Chris McKenna, okay, who were the credited screenwriters for No Way Home. Mm-hmm. And they discussed how they were going to bring Venom in. And they eventually just said, that, because there are so many issues that come with the multiverse about, mm-hmm, like, in the Venom movies, he doesn't exist in the same universe thus far as Spider-Man. No. So you can't have him show up and know who Peter Parker is,
right,
like every other villain that comes through the portal, through the multiverse and ends up in Tom Holland's Peter Parker's world.
Right, which is why he was asking the Mexican bartender about things that he had heard of, like Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet. And so, you know, he said, so there was a big purple guy from space that really liked stones of some sort. So obviously that's what he was referring to. He had no idea of anything that had happened. So he was drinking the night away, learning about the new universe that he was in.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I'm not in. He didn't draw me in, man. Tom Hardy did. He's not converting me to a Venom fan.
So here's something I want to ask you. So in knowing that you have not seen the Andrew Garfield takes on Spider-Man, what did you think about him specifically in this film? You know Toby, and this is your first time with Spider-Man, with Holland as Spider-Man also. But what did you think about Garfield's take?
Awesome.
And I agree with you.
You said that when you saw it, that this is his redemption as that character.
Exactly. It really was. And he has gone on record saying that he felt that the overall performance of the films was not indicative of what he could do with it. And he has lobbied either behind the scenes or in public, that he would definitely take another go at it. And I think after the way that he was received as a heartbroken Spider-Man in this film, that they are going to do that. And even if it's a team up with Holland, you are definitely going to see him as Spider-Man once again.
I mean, you know, it's funny. I'm looking Garfield up now, and again, my perception of him is that he's probably the best pure actor of the three.
Right.
But it's strange. I guess he hasn't been in as many movies as I thought, but
he's been in some quiet movies. Obviously, he was in Social Network. That's where a lot of people first saw him, and you and I both enjoy that film.
I love that movie.
I think the further we get away from it, the more that it makes sense to what the hell's going on in this world. It really does.
Yeah.
But, and who to blame for it anyway. But he's done some movies that, you know, he's been in films that he's been in have had Oscar contention.
Yeah, he was in Silence, a Scorsese movie about Jesuit missionaries. Yep. He was in Hacksaw Ridge,
right?
The Mel Gibson movie. He's in Under the Silver Lake, which I did not see, but I remember getting attention. And then he's out now in The Eyes of Tammy Faye and Tick, Tick, Boom, neither of which I've seen. But yeah, it's strange because I'm looking at his IMDb, and I guess my perception of him was having a much more diverse and long...
I think he's been picky, and there's nothing wrong with that.
So.
There's nothing wrong with that. He's
yeah, but
also the negative... I think he was bothered by the negative reaction to the second Spider-Man film, which pretty much killed the franchise again. You know, where the third Raimi film killed it in 2007. Here we are, or 2008. Here we are with less than a decade later, and the second Garfield film killed it again. And until Kevin Feige came along, there were no plans to make any other Spider-Man films.
Well, obviously, they were wise to let Watts jump on board and start to helm these things, because there's almost, like I said, I picked a few nits about some aspects of the story. There are some goofy moments, but I think it works with the general tone of the movie sort of being very much like a comic book come to life.
Yeah. And we've heard that before. There have been other movies that say it's a comic book. In fact, I heard the first Spider-Man movie, first Raimi movie with Tobey. It's like watching a comic book come to life right in front of you. But this one, you're right. This one even more than others.
Yeah, and you know, and even you bring back Defoe and you bring back Molina and Jamie Foxx. Mm-hmm. And yeah, man, I couldn't get over. I walked out of that theater with a massive smile on my face, and even. You know, I turned to my wife and I'm like, "You like it?" And she's like, "I thought that was great. I had no idea what was happening in the beginning, but I loved it."
Right.
And I think so much of that rests on Holland and Zendaya and the ability of the filmmakers to sort of keep so many plates spinning in the air. Mm-hmm. And when it works great. I could use a little less of Flash Thompson.
You did. Trust me. That's the least he's been in there since the first film. You know, he was a big, but you know, talk about that. I mean, maybe you didn't like the character, but that actor, whose name I will not know, has been in
Tony Revolori.
You like the film that he was in, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, that is him.
Yeah, he was, and that was in like 2013, 2014. So here he is 8 years later, and this is, you know, he's been Flash since 2017. He's doing okay.
Wow. You know, his face looks so familiar, but I couldn't place it, and it makes part. Yes.
Yeah. So
that's Wes Anderson's, probably my favorite Wes Anderson movie, Grand Budapest Hotel. Great movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, all in all, we had to do this because the whole idea is that I was not challenged to watch this, and I just felt like I had to be a part of this cultural event.
This was a big deal. This was, when you told me you wanted to do this, I was shocked, shocked, and really happy that you enjoyed it. I do have a question for you though, and I want to compare myself to you when it comes to the emotions of the film. Let me ask you a question. Yeah,
okay.
Let's put our masculinity out there for everybody to see. Did at any point you choke up at all? Anything at all?
No, I didn't get to that point, but I do see how effective how effectively they were able to latch on to emotions and sort of maneuver them.
So for go ahead.
No. I think I know where you're going with this, but yeah.
Well, for me, I mean, the obvious one is going to be, I mean, if you're listening to us, trust me, you're going to get spoilers, so I don't want to hear it. But, you know, when Aunt May dies, not only when she dies, when she was the one who said, with great power comes great responsibility. I felt it, and that was one of those moments, not an action moment, nothing going on other than those two people, like, trying to get out of their situation, that the entire movie theater went insane when she said that, okay? And probably the other moment that really hit home was when Andrew Garfield saved MJ from dying, because he could not save his love, Gwen Stacy, played by his former girlfriend, what's her name?
I don't know.
Emma Stone, excuse me. Emma Stone playing the Gwen Stacy character in those movies. When she died and he couldn't save her, he was heartbroken, and that's why he felt like a heartbroken, angry. He said it himself, after Gwen died, I just stopped pulling my punches. So when he saved MJ and he was, you know, tearing up at the fact that he was able to do that, he was able to redeem himself, I felt it there also.
Yeah, they definitely gave the Garfield Parker, like, that redemptive arc. Mm-hmm. And even for someone, like, I was vague, like, they plant the seeds and he says, yeah, I wasn't able to save Gwen Stacy. And again, I'm using my wife as sort of the baseline here. Right. You know, she doesn't know any of this. She's not reading, mm-hmm. you know, blog posts about the Marvel Universe.
Right.
But again, she wasn't aware, but it hit home for her too. And it worked for her because they did a real good job within the confines of the movie of just setting it up and then paying it off.
And I think that's the miracle of writing, of being a good writer. And you know what it takes more than anybody else. If you are writing things in the right way, then the message will get across. You don't have to use 10 minutes of screen time when you can say something in just 1 or 2 minutes. And
yeah,
that, you know, in the confines of this film, which was a little bit over 2 hours long, I don't even remember.
228.
Then it was, then they put everything they possibly could in there, and I did not have any questions walking out of there that felt that they missed out on.
Yeah, I think, like, as a standalone experience, I thought it was a great time. And I guess that's kind of like what a tentpole sort of blockbuster movie is in 2022. And it was a blast, man. I had a great time.
Good.
Unchallenged.
This was really good. I'm only going to be sad for one thing, that it kind of takes away your first experience with Holland and in Civil War and the other upcoming films, but maybe you'll appreciate it even more when you do watch those MCU films in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, I think I will. I think I'll view Holland much more favorably than I might have if I did not realize he's real good at this.
He really is really good. He really is.
Yeah. So this is dropping right after we record, so it's going to come out on January 14th. We're still going to do our next episode, which is going to be Captain America: Civil War and The Lighthouse.
Yes, looking forward to doing that on Monday.
And we're still debating on whether or not I'm going to force you to go see Licorice Pizza.
Well, if you're going to force me, you better do it on the next one, because I can barely find it anywhere. So,
yeah, I know. That is kind of the problem.
That's the problem. I'm not going to the Bronx to watch it, I'll tell you that much.
All right. Well, we'll figure that out. But for the next episode, regularly scheduled challenge episode, it's going to be on Monday or Tuesday, depending on our schedules. But again, guys, thanks. Spider-Man, these Marvel movies, they're not that bad.
Not that bad. And this is what we learned. Very
not
good.
That bad.
Thanks,
so,
thanks for doing this, Jason. I appreciate it.
No, I'm glad I was able to have someone to talk about it with. And again, I'm Jason.
And I'm Marco.
And we'll see you next time on Movie Challenge Accepted.
Take care, everybody.